Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Because there is so much that we really have to say about Robert C. Thaler's novella, A Whole Life, we ran out of time on our last program. And I'm really sorry about that, but in some ways I'm not sorry about that either, because it's really a lot of fun for us. But I had just begun talking about Andreas Egger's relationship with Hubert Cranstalker, and I do think it's worth talking about, so let's get right back into that today. If you remember, we were on page 12, and we had talked about how Andreas's mother had lived an irresponsible life, as C. Thaler talks about it. In other words, she had poor Andreas out of wedlock, and then she died, and as they say, she was summoned to God's bosom. But someone had to take care of Andreas as a very young boy, and of course, he went to the Cranstalker family. And so we know that his time there was not, let's say, the best time. And, you know, there are a lot of people in this world that didn't necessarily grow up with the best parents, or maybe grew up under step-parents, or maybe with aunts and uncles and grandparents, and some of them were hard on the children. But if you look at Andreas, and I think one of the big lessons of the book was that he really still came out pretty good at the end. And, you know, as we've been saying, he not only had a whole life, he had a full life. But I do think it's interesting, and I just want to come back to this just briefly, just to remind you, in case you forgot what we originally said, is that Cranstalker considered himself to be, you know, very religious, and, you know, he was like, considered he was like God's representative on earth. And so on page 13, let's go back to there and down towards the bottom of the page. This was Cranstalker's view of religion. Now, of course, we know he did beat Andreas quite severely for many different things, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But I do think this is classic C. Thaler in the way he writes. He says, "Man was formed and hardened by God's hand to subdue the earth and all that moves upon it. Man carries out God's will and speaks God's word. Man creates life with the strength of his loins and takes life with the strength of his arms. Man is flesh, and he is earth, and he is a farmer, and his name is Hubert Cranstalker." And so, of course, Andreas' stepfather had a really, really, you know, arrogant view of himself. He goes on to say, "When it pleases him so to do, he digs his field, grabs a full-grown sow and hoists it onto his shoulders, begets a child, or hangs another over the yoke of the plow." And what he's talking about is a child, to give them the spanking or a beating. "He is the man, the word, and the deed." And it goes on, and it gives a quote. It says, "Lord, have mercy," said Cranstalker, and brought the rod whistling down. "Lord, have a mercy." And so that's how he would spank Andreas, or really literally abuse Andreas. Now he goes on to say, "There were reasons enough for these beatings: spilt milk, moldy bread, a lost cow, or an evening prayer wrongly stammered." And of course, you know, any expert in child rearing knows that those are like, you never spank a child for spilling milk or for letting a bread go moldy. I mean, why would a child be responsible for that? Or a lost cow. I mean, cows can be very independent creatures and go off on their own, and it wouldn't have been the child's fault. But notice it says there, "Once the farmer cut the rod too thick, or had forgotten to soak it, or struck with greater fury than usual, it was hard to say exactly which. At any rate, he struck, and somewhere in the little body there was a loud crack, and the boy stopped moving. 'Lord, have mercy,' said Cranstalker, lowering his arm in astonishment. Then it goes on to say, little Edgar was brought into the house, laid on the straw, and brought back to life by the farmer's wife with a bucket of water and a beaker of warm milk. Something was out of place in his right leg, but as it would be too expensive to have it examined in a hospital, the bone setter, Alloy Clammerer, was sent for from the neighboring village. Alloy Clammerer was a friendly man with an unusually small, pale pink hands, but their strength and dexterity were legendary, even among woodcutters and blacksmiths. And so this is the sad part of the story where Cranstalker actually broke his hip. And then, as we've talked in previous programs, he becomes the limping devil that Horned Hennis talks to him about being when he's carrying him down the mountain. But Cranstalker is really an interesting character. And I think there are probably a lot of people that are out there listening, either knew a Cranstalker or maybe even were raised by a Cranstalker. And that seems to have been certainly part of that time period, if you look back into the 30s and 40s. And I know that in my family, you know, our father really took good care of us, but then sometimes we all thought he could be a little hard. But we were raised Irish Catholic, and I think there's plenty of stories about Irish Catholics, so that I don't need to go into that right now. But it is interesting when we look at this whole situation between the two of them. Unfortunately, Cranstalker's religion did not work, and it just built hate into Andreas. He really began to hate him. And there did come that time period when, and I think I've mentioned this before, and I don't necessarily have to go back and read that all again, when he was 18 and Cranstalker wanted him to do something and he wouldn't do it, and Cranstalker was going to, well, turn him over the plow again. And Andreas, because he had grown very strong and the limp wasn't all that bad anyway, he said, "You touch me, I'm going to kill you." And so... so essentially what they did is they kicked him out, and he was able to go on. But let's skip over now to page 93, and you two could interject in here. I do have the panel here with me today, by the way. I'm doing all the talking, so if you wanted to interject something in here while we're talking about Cranstalker, I know that my wife doesn't like to read that section of the book, so... I know it really does sound bad, but I think it is, and for many people out there, it is a part of their life, but it is something I think you can learn from Andreas that you can just still overcome it.
Yes, that's right. That was one of the things that turned me off about the book at the very beginning, because it is at the beginning, but then seeing how Andreas does overcome and really becomes a very positive person in spite of it all. What makes the book really worthwhile then? Yes. But
that's right.
There is that contrast between, and you're going to get to that, how Cranstalker looks at things. He's very negative, and himself very negative about life, and Edgar ends up being positive.
Yes, I know. I've told everybody that we're going to end these programs. We're going to end them, but I think we're going to actually have one more after this one. So we're having so much fun talking about this book. But it is true is that I think who really came out on top of that situation, and it certainly is not Cranstalker, and we find that out at the very end of the book, and that's exactly what how they paint it, or how Seethaler paints it, is that Cranstalker was just negative, and he was negative about life, and he kind of hid behind God, but really, we know that God isn't even that way. I mean, God... it even says biblically that God never punishes us according to our sins. He probably could punish us more, until obviously we know prophetically and biblically that God is going to correct certainly the modern nations of Israel very severely for rebelling against him. But it is interesting. On page 93, this is really at the end of Andreas's life, coming toward the close of his life. He runs into Cranstalker again. So we know he was very happy to kind of be out from underneath him. And notice We know that Edgar has been through a lot at this point. We've talked about that in previous programs. But on the middle of page 93, it says, a few weeks after his return, Edgar came across old Cranstalker. He was sitting in front of his farm on a rickety milking stool, and Edgar greeted him as he walked past. Cranstalker slowly lifted his head. It was a while before he recognized Edgar. "You," he said in an ancient croaking voice, "you of all people." Edgar stopped and looked at the old man sitting there, slumped, peering up at him from yellow eyes. The hands on his knees were thin and kindling. His mouth hung half open and seemed to be entirely devoid of teeth. Edgar had heard that two of his sons had not returned from the war, whereupon he had tried to hang himself from the pantry door frame. The brittle wood had not withstood his weight, and Cranstalker had survived. From then on, the old farmer had spent his days yearning for death. He saw death crouched on every corner, and each evening he was convinced that eternal rest would descend on him with the darkness. But he always woke again the next day, even sicker, more morose, more corroded by his yearning than before. "Come on over here," he said, craning his head forwards like a chicken. "Let's see what you look like." Says Edgar took a step towards him. The old man's cheeks were sunken, and his hair, once gleaming black, now hung from his skull as white and thin as cobwebs. It'll soon be over for me. Death misses no one," he said. "Every day I hear him coming round the corner, but every time he's just one of the neighbor's cows or a dog or the shadow of some other creeping creature." So it's very interesting that in this book, the only character to talk about death that doesn't see it as the cold lady is who? It's Cranstalker. He sees it as him. And so I don't know what you think, but I think it's kind of like maybe Cranstalker's own cold lady is himself. You know, it's like it's a he. You know, it's like he's like the epitome of death and negativity and all that. So let me just read this, and then we can maybe get some discussion going. He says, Edgar stood as if rooted to the spot. For a moment, he felt as if he were a child again, and he was afraid the old man might get up to his feet and rise up tall as a mountain. "And so today it's you," the farmer continued. "Someone like you just comes around the corner, and others don't come anymore. That's justice for you. I was Cranstalker once, and now look at me. What's become of me? A heap of rotting bones, and just enough life left in them not to crumble to dust on the spot. All my life I walked upright. I bowed to the Lord and no one else. And how does the Lord thank me? By taking two of my sons, by tearing my own flesh and blood from my body. And because that still isn't enough for him, that SOB," he said, "because he still hasn't squeezed the last drop of life out of an old farmer like me, he lets me sit outside my farm every day from morning till night, waiting for death. So here I sit, wearing my backside to the bone, but the only things that come around the corner are a couple of cows and a couple of shadows and you. You of all people." So, come on, what do you guys think of that?
First, I think it's very interesting that Cranstalker lives so long. And so his presence is in the life of Andreas from the very beginning, and also later into his life. You know, it seems like the bad things hang around a long time.
Right.
And so he's sort of got this person who's caused him lots of grief continuing through his whole life, which is, of course, connects with the title of the book. And then I think it's very interesting, too, about Cranstalker, actually the way his death does take place. So when finally he does die, which is years after this event where they meet, that he's listening to music. And he's reacting negatively against the music, and he pounds his chest, and he drops over dead. So it's almost a comic relief that he dies for what most people would find as peaceful and beautiful. He dies in the face of that, and yet he was lived the kind of life that he's lived and the terror he's caused on other people. So
yeah, it's kind of like the old, I don't know if it's an old Irish proverb or just a plain proverb, but, you know, it's only... you know, only the good die young.
Right.
Yeah, right. So here it's just like, you know, Cranstalker's view of himself is so warped. You know, he says, I lived a righteous life, and I only bowed down to the Lord. Well, he doesn't even know that maybe the Lord didn't like
that's
him
right.
either. You know, that's why he let him live a little longer, so maybe he
right.
would change.
Right.
You know,
right.
so
yeah, he's just so hateful to God.
Right.
Basically, he's just hateful.
He's very hateful. Called God an SOB.
Yes.
I mean, that's not going to bring a lot of blessings into your life.
There's one place I went to, on 96, where Andreas is thinking about meeting him at this point, and I think there's a little, I don't know for sure, a little contrast there. He talks about after he felt sorry for the old farmer, and then he went along the narrow path up the mountain all the way to, I don't know how to pronounce that, Pistler's, whatever. Anyway, up here the ground was soft and the grass short and dark. Drops of water trembled on the tips of the blades, making the whole meadow glitter as if studded with glass beads. Edgar marveled at these tiny, trembling drops that clung so tenaciously to the blades of grass, only to fall at last and seep into the earth or dissolve to nothing in the air. Could that have something to do with the fact that Cranstalker was basically, you know, dying? He was dissolved into air, but there was a contrast because the drops of water were kind of beautiful. They glittered, but they just dissolved into air. Is that possible? Because it's just right after talking about Cranstalker, I don't know.
Yes, it's like he's almost making like a metaphor for life, that, you know, here this sort of bead of water tenaciously hangs onto a grass blade and then it falls off into the earth and disappears, sort of like what happens to human life. It just sort of at some point falls off and disappears. But, of course, in the case of Cranstalker, he wasn't tenaciously hanging on to life. He actually wanted to. I think he wanted to go.
Yeah, he did, but I think it's interesting that the book does talk about death, and death is common.
Right.
You know, we have Nana, you know, get smothered by her dough. you know, of course, you know, Thomas Maddell, you know, he has this kind of a dim view of death as well, and he just dies kind of like of pneumonia kind of thing. And so death is common, and people do die in unusual ways. It's just, it's really a common thing, and so common things happen when you die. But if you look at Cranstalker, and here, like I said, we've talked about earlier, is that he's the only one that really is openly religious and that really actually right. believes in God, and still, at the end of his life, he hates God.
Right.
He doesn't have anything good to say about it. But who really has come out positive at the end? Who in the book dies, let's say, the best way you can die?
Well, Andreas.
It's Andreas.
Andreas. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He dies built into a home in the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I think it is really interesting. We just skip over Derry was talking before about this on bottom of page 96 when he dies. You know, he's listening to radio in his room. And he dies when the radio's on, and like it wasn't a very peaceful death. It says there, he says, when the presenter announced that the next program would be a concert of brass band music, the old man gave a sudden cry, pounded his fist repeatedly against his ribs, and finally slid off the chair, stiff and dead, to the music's tinny, rhythmical accompaniment. So usually, sound of a brass band is usually, a brass band is usually very happy.
Right, right.
But it caused him to have a heart attack.
Right. Yeah. Well, he violently reacted to it, you know.
Yes.
He's very much against it.
Yeah, so anyway. But notice the very next page, and I don't know if we do, we're probably going to have to slip into a second program here. And we do want to give you our final thoughts because we do have to end this story. But I think if you wanted to talk about this again at the end, we can do that. But it says during the funeral, this is Edgar actually goes to his funeral. It says during the funeral, it bucketed down, meaning it poured rain. It says the road was flooded with ankle-deep mud. And that really goes back to that page 96 and the tear, you know, the drops of water on the grass. So here it's pouring rain. And, you know, maybe God's happy and that's why there's all the rain. It says, Edgar himself by this time, over 70, walked right at the back. He thought about the farmer who had spent all of his life thrashing his own happiness away from him. They were walking in the pouring rain past the little restaurant on what used to be the Arshmandel farm when a child's laughter rang out loudly with remarkable clarity. One of the windows was ajar and flickering brightly. The landlord's little son was sitting in the room in front of an enormous television set, his face right up against the screen. The reflection of the images danced across his forehead. He was clutching the antenna with one hand and slapping his thighs with the other as he laughed. He was laughing so hard that through the curtain of rain, Edgar could make out the glistening drops of spittle spraying against the box. He felt an urge to stop and stand there to press his forehead against the window and laugh along with the boy. But the funeral procession moved on, dark and silent. So here, Edgar could still laugh. And so if you look at Cranstalker's life there, he just really didn't end well at all. And as we'll see towards the as we get close to wrapping up this book, Andreas does end really well. So I thought what we would do now, is there any other comments on Cranstalker here?
Well, just that you read that one, I think that was a wonderful sentence there, was he thought about the farmer who has spent all his life thrashing his own happiness away from him. It was like, Cranstalker, he beat Andreas, but he did that to everything. In other words, he was that's the way he lived his life, and he made himself unhappy, whereas Andreas was the opposite. He went through hard things, but he was happy. He actually made happiness. So I think there's a real contrast there between Cranstalker and Andreas. So.
Yeah, and there are some people that just don't want to be happy. Mm. They just don't want it.
Right.
And I think I've mentioned before, I was raised Irish, and a lot of Irish people are not real happy. there's always some problem. And, of course, my wife and I have been to Ireland, it's three times now. I haven't been there twice. Of course, I would want to go again anyway. And, there is an Irish angst that the Irish have, and they've had it for millennia, and they can be a very rebellious people. Irish people do not want to be told they're wrong either. And so there's this Irish angst. And so certainly Cranstalker maybe had Austrian angst.
Probably did.
There's probably Italian angst and German angst. We can learn so much from this book about life that you don't have to, no matter what happens in life, you don't have to let it get you totally down and out. You can move forward, keep moving forward. I mean, there's so many difficult things that people have to go through. I know, losing a mate or even losing a child, and there's so many families have lost sons in the war, and now people are losing not only sons, they're losing sons and daughters in war. But Cranstalker lost two sons in World War II, and he couldn't handle it. He wanted to commit suicide. And we have to really work hard to get the right perspective on our life. So I think we ought to slip in and maybe... We still have a good minute or so here. I think we ought to begin to just give our final thoughts on the book, and then we can continue this again with the next program. But there's so many things to talk about. I know a person here I know locally came up to me on I saw them out at an event, and they know I'm hosting this program. They just told me they wanted to tell me how much they've loved this book. And, of course, they're mature, mature adults. And one thing that we've been talking about, let's say privately, the panel, is we realize that I think you do have to have a certain experience to really appreciate this book. And we had a little meeting before we came in here today just to discuss it, and we were just laughing about some of the things that you experienced in this book. So, let's see. Let's see. We're getting pretty close here to the end. Maybe we'll just save this all for the very next program. And I just want to maybe talk a few minutes about where we're going to go after next week's program. And next week's program will be the last one, but we will be getting into Helen McDonald's book, H is for Hawk. And it is about falconry, but it's also about the loss of her father. But it's also about friendship. I think it's just a captivating story. And so I think you really like that. And it's H is for Hawk, and it's by Helen McDonald. Now, I've decided on what the next book is going to be as well. And it is a book. It's called The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. And I did not plan to talk about this the way I'm talking about it, but it is about a pianist studying piano in France. And so, again, it's not a fictional book. It's a diary. And so we'll get a little bit into French culture as well with that. And then I'll talk when we get into to Helen McDonald's book, then I'll talk about the next book after that. And then we have pretty much decided that next summer, or the summer of 2017, we're going to call it the Summer of Classics. And we've already picked some classics for that one as well. And but the lead into that, we are going to be talking about Pride and Prejudice. So all of you ladies out there that have been writing me emails saying, please, please, please do Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So I'm going to succumb and do that. So we'll be looking forward to that. But that's not going to be until March or April in order to get ready in for the Summer of Classics. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcug.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. And that address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.